Peace, the perfect word, is sounding like a universal hymn. What a great line of verse. And how it keeps going, under oceans, over mountains, to the world's remotest rim. My sermon today is very theological. So let me start by considering that that line from the hymn unfolds on a couple of levels, and one is theological. Perfect, peace, the perfect word. Perfect is a very particular and complex word as it comes to us from the Bible, where it can mean perfect in our usual sense of ideal or flawless, but it can also mean fulfilled or complete, which is not the same thing. For example, in Hebrews 10:14, it says about Jesus, by a single offering he has perfected for all time those who are sanctified. That didn't mean that Jesus' followers were all now flawless. It meant rather that he had with his death redeemed them, completed them, fulfilled the promise. So that's where that secondary sense of perfect can come from. Now, the hymn that we just sang was written by an American poet and scholar of transcendentalism, Odell Shepherd, a man very familiar with theological interpretations of language. So there's this whole layer of theology in that word perfect, in that beautiful opening. Peace, the perfect word, the fulfilling word, right? The completing word. Peace as the completion. But apart from that more religious definition, in the most everyday sense, if we know nothing about that secondary meaning, and just look at the most everyday sense, there's still such a great grand wholeness to that lyric that really reflects, in fact, the way wholeness is the essence of peace, doesn't it? Peace, doesn't that imply wholeness and healing and calm and comfort and ease and rest and completion? I want you to try something with me. I would like you to try saying that word aloud with me now, and I want you to pay attention to the feelings it evokes, and I'm hoping embarrassment is not one of them. We're just doing this together as a congregation. We're just saying an important word together. Okay, so take a breath. Peace. Let yourself feel the sense of wholeness that that word conveys when you say it. Try it again. Peace. Feel it in your soul. Feel it in this community. Peace in this place and time. I can say peace and feel it here, or at home, in the quiet and warm with my dogs at my feet. I can say it and feel it utterly, even though my peace is just one piece of peace. Even if my peace is shared by no one else. Even when so many have no peace at all. Peace is one of those big words that are one syllable and echo and call beyond their own brief sound. There's this extraordinary class of words that are all like that. Peace, war, love, hate, kill, live, die, fall, fly, hope, faith, death, God. See what I mean? Each one of those so brief words holds a world in its brief sound. Now we have rolled around to December with at least three holidays that turn on peace: Hanukkah, which we've talked about, right? The peace restored across a land, peace that allowed for a temple to be rededicated, for a sacred fire to be rekindled, for communion with the divine to be reestablished, peace that was won after a brutal persecution and winning an impossible war, peace at the cost of blood and life, hard-won peace, fragile peace, that once won was undermined by infighting and corruption. Solstice, the peace of the lit candle and the Yule log that burn bright and warm amidst winter's cold, the peace of the evergreen bough, full of sap and scent, brought from the frozen hard world without, the peace of light and life standing against darkness and lifelessness. And Christmas, the birth of the Prince of Peace, the birth of hope under a far shining star in the same land as Hanukkah, racked again by persecution and different invaders grinding the nation under their heel, came the birth of a child. Full of the promise every child holds, he grew to be a leader, and stories grew around his greatness, stories that said even just his birth showed that he would change everything. Simply by preaching and living his message of compassion and care, faith, and the promise of a new life even unto death. The more we look at peace, the more we see that, in fact, there are many kinds of peace, many definitions of peace, many understandings, not only of what peace is, but about how to create it. Pieces of peace, if you will, which gives rise to a bunch of questions. So really, my talk this morning is theological inquiry. Is peace, with that sense of wholeness it conveys, actually whole itself? Is it one, perhaps a whole comprised of many parts, like a rainbow? Or is it many separate experiences with commonalities, but also differences that matter enough that, in fact, there is no one piece spreading like a universal hymn? Is peace's nature actually mathematical? Can it be added to and subtracted from and multiplied or divided? Is it porous, contagious, contextual? Is it truly attainable? Is it truly impossible? Our reading this morning comes from the Taoist faith and its great, great philosopher, Lao Tzu. Peace in the world, peace in the nations, peace in the cities, peace between neighbors, in the home, in the heart. Every time I read that reading, for me, it's like one of those movie shots at the opening of a film that whizzes in from a shot of outer space to a shot of the stars, to the earth, to a continent, and then a region, and then visible land, and then homes and businesses, and then a neighborhood, and a building, and a room, and the person with whom the story begins. Can you imagine that? Have you seen that shot somewhere, this huge out to this very particular inn? Sometimes we think of peace that needs to trickle down into each and every home and heart, trickling down. But Taoism says that's exactly backwards, right? The peace actually begins with each of us. That's where it starts, not ends. That is the beginning, not the culmination. It starts in our hearts, and then in our living, and then between us, and then with those we touch, and thus does it accumulate. And what is exactly the it that we're talking about? What kind of peace are we talking about here? We're talking about harmony. harmony, which in fact, if you think about it, is also what we talk about in our chalice lighting, right? This light burns also in our hearts, and it lights our path towards harmony and justice for all. Taoism says that peace is derived from harmony, which is also balance. The world is composed not of warring opposites, but of complementary opposites that comprise a greater whole. When grain reaches its fullest life in the summer, fully yang, it will naturally begin to transform into its opposite quality, go to seed, and then die back for winter, fully yin, in an endless balanced cycle. When all is in balance, the yin and the yang, the shade and the light, both valued and both defined in relationship to each other, when all is in cyclical or rhythmic balance, then all is in harmony with all else, and quiescence, serenity, peace is achieved. Our own Unitarian theologian, the famed 19th century American thinker and writer Ralph Waldo Emerson, was always about being complete in yourself, living your own fullest life. He was right with Oprah in that one. Realizing your abilities and dreams most deeply and attending to the wisdom of your own conscience and perceptions in the world. And thus did he live, as well as preach, and it served him well. Very much in this vein, on peace, about peace, he wrote, "No one can bring you peace but yourself." So let's go back to my peace at home again. If I'm sitting there, feeling utterly peaceful, there's a crackling fire to warm my room and dogs to warm my feet and maybe a mug of some warm beverage at my hand, and people I love well are safe, I am as content as can be, as peaceful as can be, and at that very moment, there are hundreds of thousands in the world without peace, without safety or warmth or companionship or food. Is my peace real? This is an honest question. Is my peace real? Because that immediate experience is utterly peaceful. Even if it is being balanced, shall we say, by the privations or suffering of others elsewhere, far or even near, does that impact my peace? Or should it? Ralph Waldo Emerson would likely have said, no, it doesn't, or shouldn't. We laud him, and I do love him for so much of what he said, but he also said, don't speak to me of the poor. Are they my poor? He lived in the beautiful village of Concord, Massachusetts in the 1800s, and though he traveled some and read more literature from across the world and the world's religions, he did not exist as we do now in the immediate expansiveness and interconnectedness of the global village. So much as I do love Emerson for so many of his insights, I would have to say that potent as my peace feels to me in that moment, as indeed it is for me in that moment, in a very yin-yang way, it may be both real and an illusion. I am not saying it is only an illusion. I did warn you this was going to be very theological this morning. In a very yin-yang way, it may be both real and an illusion. Because my peace is only my peace, is only a piece of peace, and a very small piece at that. So I need to edge myself closer, actually, to George de Benneville, an 18th century universalist, an American who wrote this about what grounded his conversion to universalism way back then. He said, "And I took it so to heart that I believed that my happiness would be incomplete while one creature remained miserable." What if we use de Benaville's sense of his universalist faith and substitute peace for happiness? "And I took it so to heart that I believed my peace would be incomplete while one creature remained miserable." Yeah. Yeah, if I'm going to be realistic about my peace, then yes. My peace, real as it feels to me, is only mine, and it is incomplete while another remains miserable. Since many are miserable, it is both real and very, very incomplete. A very imperfect peace, and in fact, definitely mathematical in nature. It is divided and subtracted by the ununiversality of it, one which would surely be added to and multiplied if it were more widely shared. My peace would be imperfect even if I looked to other faith traditions. Let's go back to the Bible, where the definition of peace includes active relationship to the sacred, contemplation of and relation to what the Bible calls God. It says in Isaiah, "Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee because he trusteth in thee." So what we would say now is those who keep their minds and lives focused on the sacred, on God, whatever we call the divine, because they trust the divine, those you will keep in perfect peace. Those you will keep in perfect peace. Any historically grounded skeptic will point out that even some of God's greatest devotees were treated to anything but perfect peace in their living and sometimes in their dying. But also, anyone who reads the writing of God's devotees, early Christians and Jews, and again, we're speaking purely in a biblical Jewish-Christian context in this moment, early martyrs, 12th century Christians like Julian of Norwich or Hildegard of Bingen, or 12th century Jews like Maimonides, also sees that their understandings of peace, of blessedness, of true communion with the sacred are complicated and leave any story of martyrdom open to interpretations that we may or may not be able to accept ourselves. Regardless of history, the Bible's promise of peace is through mindfulness and relationship to the divine. And I can buy that. I can buy that. Some of my own moments, while I have a faith that is not biblically based, some of my own moments of feeling utterly aware of holiness and a great sense of deep, overwhelming connection to what I call the divine, these moments were surely peaceful. Though not only peaceful, but also peaceful. And beautiful in that peace. Beautiful in a different way than simply being deeply content by the hearth in my home. How many more pieces of peace there are. The way some people speak of death as a peace attained after an agonizing life or illness, the peace that is the impossibly still center in the midst of the swirling chaos of a hurricane or a storm of events, the simple, simple peace that is freedom from fear for your life or the life of your loved ones. Peace because we are not afraid that they are sick or dying. Not afraid they may be killed on their way home in our neighborhood, or killed in a war, or killed in an attack. What peace to feel that. What peace, especially if we have known that fear. Days, maybe years, without that peace. Speaking purely for myself, in this month we have devoted to considering peace. I have to confess that I am not a pacifist. Because I do not believe pacifism can make the world safe for all, much as I wish it could. I'm not a pacifist because I am not willing to die rather than fight, possibly rather than kill. But flawed as pacifism may be for me, war, we all know, war is not the answer. And as our nation moves towards Christmas and the advent of the Prince of Peace, our relationship with peace is fatally complicated by our relationship to war. Loving peace is not enough. And hating war is not enough. And I cannot preach about peace without saying that the challenge of finding the larger path to real peace for our nation and our world will not come until we have learned some new way that we have not yet been able to see. The ways we say we work for peace with war will never establish peace. Perhaps it is before us. Perhaps it is around us. Perhaps this will be the century when we will learn to find new ways of resolution that do not shatter lives and souls. In the midst of all the pieces of peace, there are perhaps pieces of peace we cannot even name yet because we cannot see them yet. They are unseen colors that require a special lens, more rods and cones than our spiritual moral eyes yet possess. They are that elusive fragrance that we cannot quite identify. The strange word in a new language that we cannot pronounce because we have not heard it clearly yet. Peace. You complex and elusive, beckoning, beautiful thing. We know you, and we cannot grasp you. We have you, and we lose you. In the end, it's not just different words for the same thing. Peace, shalom, salam, irini, mir, yin-yang. It's actually different words for different pieces of peace. And they are not all the same. Harmony, balance, communion with the divine, stillness, content, freedom from suffering, they are different. And they are part of a great, blessed whole. All of these together. All of these together, harmony, balance, communion, stillness, content, freedom from suffering, yes, yes, peace. As we dwell in these holidays that celebrate peace, as we sing about peace and tell stories about the advent of peace or the winning of peace or the experience of peace, what lenses do we need? What do we need to see, to hear, to understand for all the pieces of peace to become truly whole, to bring us closer to the day when no one suffers while we enjoy our piece of peace. My mind turns to Lao Tzu again, to this idea of harmony. As I look forward to singing carols and to the harmonies, rich with layers, voices, and instruments that do not need to sound the same, indeed, that create a richer whole because of their difference, their blending and distinctness. And I think our traditions have more to teach us. I hope they have more to teach us, a path to show us if we listen while we sing. Amen.